The American intelligence community has high confidence that there's a link between Russian intelligence and outlets associated with hacked emails during the 2016 presidential campaign, including WikiLeaks. But how did WikiLeaks become associated with a foreign government in the first place? Patrick Tucker has written about this. He's technology editor for the news website Defense One. And Patrick, first off, what is the significance of the revelations of Russia's involvement in WikiLeaks?
Well, there's a lot of ways to think about this. The most important is that WikiLeaks, very much since the summer of 2016, but also beforehand, has become a de facto arm of the Kremlin's information warfare operation against the West. So they serve a lot of different functions for a lot of different people, but the assets that they make public are in some cases donated to them by people that actually want the website to do what it purports to do, which is serve as a clearinghouse of information that should reach the public. But increasingly, it's also a dumping site for information that's been stolen illegally. So what you have is a incredibly elaborate information warfare operation that is masking itself as something else. And it's run by a group that is very diverse, that doesn't fit the profile of like a Russian information officer. Nevertheless, that's the function that they serve. And it's that hybrid nature of the organization that lets it be so effective and, in the minds of many people, have such credibility as a quote-unquote transparency group, even though that's not actually what they are.
Well, does this represent, do you think, an evolution for WikiLeaks? I mean, is this sort of what they started out to do, or is this to sort of become what they are now?
I think this is not what they started out to do. If you listen to the actual founders of the site, there was a real and, I think, very legitimate need and enthusiasm for a site like WikiLeaks in the 2000s, in the early 2000s. Under Julian Assange, it's become something different as he's taken firm and total control over the operations of the organization. But originally, it was set up to be what many people used it as, which was a site where you could anonymously give information that might be relevant to the public. And to a certain extent, that's the purpose that they served in the case of then Bradley and now Chelsea Manning, who was a U.S. Army intelligence officer who gave the site information related to U.S. activities in the prosecution of the Iraq War.
Given sort of this evolution of WikiLeaks, what do you think that does for, I don't want to call it a movement, but for transparency advocates both in the U.S. and around the world, that this site, which, as you say, started off as a place to get information and in some cases anonymously, has sort of turned into something else completely?
Right. Well, and this is the whole thing. This is something that's really a trend that everyone should have probably anticipated in the 2000s, but that nobody did. And now that lack of anticipation is having a really terrible effect. So much of the transparency movement now has been co-opted, frankly, by nation-state governments that internally do not exercise transparency, that stifle transparency, that in the case of Russia, target and kill journalists. They've appropriated this idea of transparency in order to release information that's either framed in a way so that it's no longer an accurate representation of the thing that it's supposed to be about, or in some cases, in terms of Russian disclosures, outright lies, to convince a set of people of an entirely alternative reality.
Well, so given what we know now about Russia's involvement with WikiLeaks and how that all played out during the 2016 election, do you get the sense this is just kind of a fact of political life going forward? I mean, is this something that candidates and campaigns and committees are just going to have to get used to?
Yes, and they should get used to much more of it. Having said that, there are some things that can be done that different campaigns can do. There's an interesting case in point. If you look at what happened to the DNC, contrast that with the Macron campaign in France earlier this spring. And you see an example of how campaigns and how institutions that are affiliated with governments are actually beginning to get a jump on this technique and are decreasing the value of this type of attack. In France, in the 2017 elections, what happened was, first, Defense One, like my outlet, reported that election was being targeted by the same Russian actors that had targeted the DNC. You help create an awareness among the populace that this is happening. The Macron campaign set up a variety of like dummy email accounts, and they began to let everybody expect that they might be the victim of a hack. By the time information was finally leaked, much of it contained information that was false, that the Macron campaign was very quickly able to say is false, because they had set up these sort of booby traps, knowing that their accounts would be hacked. And it had the effect of immediately discrediting the attack, of discrediting the information that folks were trying to use against them. The press didn't report on the attack, on the hacks, and on the information that was stolen, because it had been discredited from the very beginning. So that's how you get in front of this, is you have to have intelligence organizations, you have to have cybersecurity groups, and you have to have targets all working together to essentially predict and announce that a attack is going to happen, and then working to discredit information that's stolen before it's reframed, repackaged, and before it reaches the public as propaganda.
Patrick Tucker is technology editor for Defense One.